You got another question?
No, I think what I'm going to do, we have some people calling in, and they have some questions.
All right.
Of the three people...
Fire away.
Of the three people that are listening, all of them are calling in. So there's more than that calling in.
Well, maybe so, there's more than three people listening.
I guess somebody's going to call about their subscription problem. Hello, you're on the air with Matthew Lazar.
Hello?
Yes.
I wanted to ask about, commend the description that has been given so far and ask about redefining our opponent in this war. And now that we've supposedly gotten partway anyway into the destruction of the enemy locally, and now when shall we take on the enemy globally, which is obviously the government and the rules and regulations that have ruined broadcasting for the rest of the people?
Well, I think that it's very important that the Pacifica Foundation... What was that? Was that? Oh, anyway, I just heard a whole bunch of beeps.
Yes, I don't know what that was, okay. But it won't happen again.
All right. I think it's very important for the Pacifica Foundation to take a much more active and aggressive stance and to support the struggles nationally for the repeal of the Telecommunications Act, certainly those parts of the Telecommunications Act that have relaxed antitrust laws. I wrote a letter to the Pacifica Campaign. The Pacifica Campaign is this organization that came out of New York City and was headed by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez. And I wrote a letter saying that now that we have come this far, the Pacifica Campaign really needs to coordinate all of this energy that was directed at the Pacifica National Board and go across the Rubicon and begin directing it towards the authors of the containment of non-commercial community-based broadcasting, specifically the CPB, and especially the National Association of Broadcasters, which has spent so much time trying to destroy locally based radio. They were the biggest lobbyists against micro radio. They were the biggest lobbyists for the Telecommunications Act. They're the biggest lobbyists for satellite-based radio, for conglomerate-style radio, and conglomerate-style broadcasting in general. We've shown over the last year with the coordination of the Pacifica Campaign how powerful we can be, how effectively we can mobilize grassroots support around community-based broadcasting. This is not just an issue at Pacifica. There are all kinds of battles going on across the United States. For example, in New York City, where people were at each other's throats at WBAI, there was also another radio station, which was WEVD, which was owned by the Jewish Daily Forward. The Jewish Daily Forward, after the passage of the Telecommunications Act, sold WEVD, which used to be a local community-based talk radio station, and they sold it to ESPN, and now it's a sports talk station. And there's actually a bunch of people in New York City who named Save WEVD who have been trying to fight this. We need to coordinate all of that energy. And the Pacifica Foundation, I think, is once it heals from this, which I think will not take less than a year and probably will take more than a year, needs to begin to divert all of this energy that was used to roll back the national board towards this larger problem. Because I really think that if we don't do that, we'll just develop another generation of leaders who will become disillusioned and will become increasingly amenable to the very things that the previous national board became amenable to.
Hello, you're on the air with Matthew Lazar.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My name's Gary. I live in Los Feliz now, but have only been here for about 2 years. I lived in Washington, D.C. for a little over a year before that, and I lived in New York City for several years before that. and didn't know a thing about Pacifica until I got hired as a production engineer at WBAI in 1995.
And so you knew, were you hired by Samori Marksman?
No, I was hired by, well, by committee, but Valerie Van Eisler was the manager at that time.
She is, I think she is again now.
Is she?
Yeah.
Okay. I, as I said, I didn't know anything about Pacifica until I got this job and I started learning something about it. But I'm so glad to hear you talking about this on the air because there was so much that I didn't know. I became aware as an employee and a union member at BAI that there seemed to be an awful lot going on towards the centralization, towards taking power away from the local radio stations in the network, towards busting the union at WBAI anyway. I don't know about elsewhere. Trying to say that volunteer members could not be union members. That didn't work. The NLRB ruled against them.
Now, my understanding is that the NLRB ruled against them, and then a subsequent, they took it to court, or they took it to a higher, they took it to the NLRB higher commission, and the NLRB eventually ruled in favor of Pacifica.
If they did, that must have happened after I
left. Yes, I think that that's what that's my understanding of what happened.
I left in 98.
I see, okay.
And went down to Washington, D.C., was not working for Pacifica anymore at that point. So I kind of lost touch with what was going on, but I was a member of WPFW.
You mean you were a subscriber?
A subscriber member.
So what was your impression of WPFW?
I liked it. I liked BAI more. I was more interested in the programming material, but I was a longtime New Yorker, so I could relate more to what I was hearing on and helping produce on WBAI than what I heard on PFW.
Right.
But then I moved out here to L.A. and started listening to KPFK, and I really liked what I heard. Except that I started hearing all these rumors about the horrible things that were going on at BAI. And I saw Amy Goodman. She had been news director when I first started working there. And then went on to produce Democracy Now! While I was still there. And, in fact, I worked with her on a few projects with Democracy Now! As a production engineer, but I wasn't on the Democracy Now! Staff. But I saw her during the 2000 convention, and before she got exiled. So when I started hearing all this stuff about WBAI in exile and so forth, and mass firings, and I was wondering what's going on. But KPFK wasn't talking about it. I didn't know what was going on.
Well, my understanding is that they're talking now, right?
And I am so glad that you are. But I have questions for you now in regards to KPFK. My impression recently has been, frankly, very negative towards Mark Cooper, who I used to enjoy listening to a great deal, and Mark Shubb. My impression is that the gag rule is being enforced more by them than by the board, that somehow they saw it as being in their favor. Mark Cooper would come on the air and say, I don't want to come on the air and talk about us. I want to talk about the news of the world. And refuse to let any mention of anything that was going on. And frankly, I couldn't understand that. That's not, there's a difference between talking about dirty laundry and talking about the nature of major decisions going on within an organization that is being supported by the listeners. The listeners need to know what's going on.
Well,
if they're going to be expected to support. And they should, and I agree with you that they should have a word on the LAB. They should be involved in some way.
Well, I think that they should, I mean, they've always been involved in some way. What they have never been is the stations have never really been formally accountable to them in any way.
Right, right.
I mean, they've always been labs, and they've always had some varying degrees of power. It used to be that labs had it used to be that labs actually sat in on hiring committees of the station general manager and program director at the various stations.
Yeah.
And they used to actually have some power. Over the late 1990s, that power was essentially stripped from them, and then even the power to have anything to do really formally with the construction of the National Board was stripped from them. Apparently, Pacifica thought that that would just be fine and that everybody would just go away and leave it alone. But people don't like having power taken away from them.
No, they don't.
That's one of the reasons why all of this has taken place. Now, let me say something about the gag rule.
Mm-hmm.
You should know that the gag rule has been a general consensus for most of the organization that the amount of talk about the Pacifica Radio Network itself on the air should be minimal.
Yes, and I would agree with that, certainly. But pushing it to the point of really censoring or not censoring yourselves, but preventing the listeners from really knowing what's going on and only hearing rumors and rumors of rumors.
Well, here's why the gag rule collapsed at Pacifica Radio. The reason the gag rule collapsed at Pacifica Radio is because there weren't any other rules. Once there are no other rules, you take away the local advisory board's power, so there's no where are you going to arbitrate disputes in the organization? Okay, you take away the local advisory board's power, so there's no point in going to the local advisory boards. You gradually centralize the organization. You neutralize the power of the program councils, so there's no point in going to the program councils. You take the volunteers out of the staff union, so there's no point in going to the staff unions. Then the next thing you know, you're shutting down radio stations, or you're threatening to shut them down. You're kicking people off the air all over the place. Where is there to go? You get rid of the station folio, so there's nowhere that you can't have dialogue or discussion on the station folios. If you get rid of all of those things, there's only one place left to go, and that's the transmitter. That's it. There's nowhere else to discuss it. There's nowhere else. If you take away all the other venues, there's only two places to discuss it: the internet and the transmitter.
The internet, yes.
The internet and the transmitter. So what happened was is that this story of the last 7 years cannot be understood without understanding the impact that the internet had on Pacifica Radio. David Giovannone, who is this fancy-dancy audience consultant, spoke before the Pacifica National Board in 2000, and he said, you know, he pontificated that the internet is the right place for Pacifica Radio to go. No kidding, said 20,000 people who already were using the internet in about a zillion ways talk about, gossip about, and organize around the Pacifica Radio Network. The internet enabled Pacifica's dissidents to unify in a way that would never have been possible 10 years earlier. So the gag rule, the reason why the gag rule basically collapsed is essentially because there weren't any other rules. What other rules were there at Pacifica Radio? How do you keep your job? How do you keep your show? What are the rules, you know? At WBAI, the rule was Once Valerie Van Isler and her group were thrown out of the station, the rule was that you could say anything nice about Pacifica on the air, but if you said anything critical, you got dumped.
Well, back to KPFK specifically.
Yes.
Again, I've been living here for about 2 years now and listening to KPFK all along and enjoying a great deal of what I heard, but wanting to know more about what was going on in the network and specifically back at BAI. With my former colleagues and friends. And then there was this whole controversy about the memo from Mark Cooper regarding Amy Goodman. And I read some of that, and I said, you know, I was just, what is this all about? You know, what is Mark Cooper's stand? And still I was hearing, nope, we can't talk about it on the air. We can't talk about it on the air. And Mark Cooper was the most adamant about that. But as soon as the old board collapsed, all of a sudden he's on the air with Mark Shubb talking about it, but talking about it in a very, I believe, disingenuous way, very misleading way, that I was unaware that he was talking about a new board. I thought he was talking about the old board. And I thought he had finally seen the light and said, okay, it's time to speak up. But then I listened to him interviewing, is it David Fertig?
Yes.
And
I haven't heard that interview.
I listened to it live, and I was stunned. I said, there's a new board, and Mark Cooper is now talking about it, but he's making it sound like the new board is the culprit, that they are destroying KPFK, and we, as friends and listeners of KPFK, must stand up and say and start making demands of the new board. And so what is going on there? Everything I'm hearing from Roy and this show and the history that you're elucidating and the things that have been happening since the new board came in, seems to me that, yeah, there's a lot of problems, but you're in the process of straightening them out.
Well, I think that that's true. I think that the new board is in the process of straightening a lot of problems out. There is a really big problem, and that is that the three lawsuits that were directed at the Pacifica board as a result of its actions, specifically it's throwing people off of the it's throwing local advisory board members off of the national board and taking the rights of national board members to appoint people to the of local advisory board people to appoint people to the national board. Those lawsuits were a very expensive proposition. They were expensive for the communities that the communities that filed them, and the Pacifica Foundation spent a huge amount of money on lawyers and on public relations people.
Expensive lawyers.
Very expensive lawyers.
And
some
very
of the top,
expensive
of,
public
some
relations
Some of the top
people.
Lawyers in the United States.
When
so
Lynn
it's going to be a
says,
very difficult. It's going to be a very difficult proposition.
You can tell the truth for free.
It's going to be a very difficult proposition to pay that off, and it's going to be very, very difficult. But I don't think that you can blame these new national board members, some of whom have just gotten on the national board, for that. The reality is that Pacifica could have settled a long, long time ago. They could have settled this issue, and they didn't. And they
right.
didn't. Instead, they decided to fight. Instead, they decided to fight.
Well,
so,
you know what Mark Cooper was saying in this interview? He was saying, okay, you're a new board, but you're just as responsible as the old board because you're the ones that were bringing the suits. You're the ones that forced the old board into the position of spending all this money, absconding with our funds to pay for their court expenses.
I don't think – well, I don't –
That's
I
basically what Mark was saying to David
okay.
Fertig.
Thanks. Not everybody's happy with the democratization process.
Well, okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead. We have a lot of calls coming in, and I want to set a time limit of 90 minutes because we have the Alan Watts people waiting for the Watts talk.
I don't want to keep Alan Watts waiting.
Okay, well, we got to take a few more calls because the board is jammed. Hello, you're on the air with Matthew Lazar.
Well, good morning. Roy, thank you very much for doing what you do and what you've always done. Matthew, good morning to you. This is Vince Ivor. We met the last
Hi,
August.
Hi, Vince. Well, how are you doing?
Good, good. Good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Briefly to what the last caller said about the gag rule.
Mm-hmm.
Officially, the gag rule has been at the discretion of the general managers at least since 99 and the troubles with KPFA, because what was happening was people were saying things out loud on KPFA, and people here in Los Angeles and elsewhere are wondering how that was possible. So officially it was at the discretion of the general manager. And here, of course, the general manager said, no, you couldn't talk about that stuff. You were very correct when you said, what are the rules? There are no rules. Certainly there are no rules regarding programming. There's no official Pacifica policy regarding programming. A few years ago at a board of directors meeting, I asked that of the chair, Mary Frances Berry, who basically said, blah, 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 nothing. There was nothing. So when we had programmers removed for alleged hate speech several years ago, we tried to get a definition of hate speech. It was never forthcoming. But going back to the beginning now, I've always maintained that in order to have a community-based and volunteer-driven organization like Pacifica, like KPFK, you had to have openness and accountability, be it at a radio station or the Red Cross or anything. Otherwise, people go behind closed doors and do what's been done. And to make that happen here, we'd have to have the empowerment of subscribers and volunteers in some way, be it the election or some way. And we at the Pacifica Accountability Committee put together a set of model bylaws based on some ways of doing things at the ACLU, some other radio stations. We found there's no perfect model for democratic radio. Indeed, when you talk to other community radio stations, you find they've had similar problems. And my question to you, I guess, is how do we make such elections work, given that KPFA has already moved in that direction, and you've not had more than a 15%...
Actually, I was corrected. It was about 20%.
Well, this last election, it was 15.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess the first one was 20, now it's down to 15. And I worry about that kind of attrition. I personally would advocate for a return to what we used to have, the Friends of KPFK, not the Mark Shub-sponsored Friends, but true Friends of KPFK, that was a sort of group of localized groups that went out and did some fundraising for the station and otherwise involved subscribers more in the running of the station. That doesn't mean getting together every day and deciding what goes on the air, but directly involving people beyond just the sort of impersonal election thing. And that's happening to some extent in the KPFK area now. But I do worry about sustaining this kind of thing over the long term. Do you have anything?
Well, I think it can be sustained over the long term. I don't think that the fact that it's a relatively small group of people who actually vote is such a terrible thing. I think that most nonprofits, what you'll find is that a large portion of the members of it don't vote. You'll find that in the ACLU. You'll find that in other organizations. I don't think it's such a bad thing that it's only 15 or 20% of the group that vote. I think that that's a much larger mandate than having a local advisory boards that can be accused of being self-appointing. I think that it's better to do it that way. And I'm not sure that all of the members of the local advisory board have to be elected. I mean, one of the problems with a completely elected local advisory board is that it excludes people who don't want to run in elections, many of whom often have important things to contribute. But I think that being able to create a structure which does produce a democratic mandate for the national leadership, or at least a partially democratic mandate, will enable you to have a national leadership that is able, when people say, why are you there? Why are you where you are? This is because I came through a process of consent, a clearly definable process of consent in which people clearly said, we want you to be where you are, which is something that the organization has never really had, and it's one of the reasons why everything fell apart so quickly over the last 4 or 5 years.
Great. Well, Matthew, thank you for being there, and thanks for being on the air.
Thank you, Vince.
Take care.
Hello, you're on the air with Matthew Lazar.
Yeah, hi. My name is Wayne. I just wanted to comment and maybe get your response that in all the meetings I've been to and all the participation, it seems like the on-air personalities or the programmers are kind of never considered. In other words, I tune in to hear, say, Roy's show or Democracy Now!, but I don't hear that as being the consideration or the driving force of the discussion ever. In other words, I don't tune in to hear, say, Bessie Wash or Mark Shub. And all the meetings and all the discussions always around the administrative side of the business.
I'm not sure that I understand the question entirely. What are you?
Not so much a question as it is just an observation that it seems to me that there's a lot of focus on, I suppose, on just the operational side of the radio. But I'm a listener, and I'm more interested in listening to particular shows, you know, the ones that I enjoy, and I don't know how you go about making sure that these shows stay on the air, or how what kind of process you use to make sure the programming is set up, you know, so you get the kind of programming. You know, some people want more diverse programming or more radical programming.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that ultimately the issue is the programming. Ultimately, the issue is what do you hear on Pacifica Radio? What's it like? How is it organized? And what is the message? That is what drives, I think, an enormous amount of the fighting and the dialogue and the debate, which has taken place. When people feel like they're included in it somehow, when there's a process in which feels somehow inclusive, at those points in Pacifica history, the organization runs relatively smoothly. When they feel like they've been driven out and they've been excluded, it doesn't run so smoothly. Unfortunately, one of the reasons why there's so much fighting about administrative processes right now is because the latter situation has really been the norm over the last 5 or 6 years. What I thought I wanted some years ago, what I'm constantly thinking about now, is what kind of an administrative operation allows for enough peace within the organization so that people can focus on programming and people can focus on the central work of the organization. That's what my thinking has been about. To a certain extent, I think that I've been right about some things. I clearly think that I've been wrong about some things, and I'm a work in progress just like everybody else.
Okay. Well, I just am thrilled that you were able to be on with us for the last 90 minutes, Matthew Lazar, and give us your rundown of the more history than probably people want to know, but all the lines are jammed, but we have Alan Watts people to satisfy.
Well, Alan Watts,
so.
Off you go.
And I really thank you so much, and remind, and again, thank you for your great book, which you did so much work on, Pacifica, The Rise of an Alternative Network, now available on paperback.
Yes.
And I'm still here. You're still here. So we'll keep on keeping on.
Good night.
That was Matthew Lazar, the official, unofficial historian of Pacifica Radio and KPFK. And I would like to dedicate this interview to the banned and the fired of KPFK from the last 6 years. And one of those banned and fired was Lynn Gary, who made the news on Counterspin today. And before we get to Alan Watts, I just can't resist playing some current news from Counterspin.
Big news is coming out of the Pacifica Radio Network these days. Since the last time we reported on Pacifica, when we heard from dissident reformers Juan Gonzalez, Lynn Gary, and Tomas Moran, the dissidents have gained real power at the network, promising to bring accountability, listener democracy, and a return to Pacifica's mission of free speech and nonviolence. The reformers gained the upper hand following a California judge's decision, which concluded several years of litigation. On the weekend of January 11th through the 13th, the Interim National Board of the Pacifica Network held a public meeting in New York City. Here to report on that meeting and to comment on developments is longtime radio activist Lynn Gary. Welcome back to Counterspin, Lynn.
Thanks.
Lynn, what happened? Give us a report about the New York meeting of the Interim Pacifica National Board.
It was a moment that some of us, I think, never believed we'd see. The room was packed, and people were lined up outside all the way around the block. When I approached the hall, which was a union hall of hotel workers, which held about 500 people, I saw people in a long line wrapped around the block. Now, this was in the theater district of Midtown Manhattan, and I said, well, that can't be the board meeting location. It must be a rock concert or something. But as we got closer and you took a look at the people, you said, no, those are ours. Well, anyway, people were out in force and, to a constantly, cheering but well-behaved crowd. We saw Democracy Now! Return to the air of all five Pacifica stations. and the firings and the reign of terror that descended on WBAI, the New York City Pacifica station, last year reversed by board decision. An announcement was made that the reactionary management at the Houston station, KPFT, had resigned. Their acting executive director had resigned, and Dan Coughlin, who was a also a fired former Pacifica news director and has been in the trenches of the struggle with us for some time, was made the acting executive director until a permanent replacement is chosen. And it was a pretty special day. Probably the high point for most of the people in the room, as most of the people there were WBAI listeners and band producers, was the moment when the resolution passed to accept the recommendations of a special committee that had been formed to deal with the WBAI situation. And when it was announced that everything would be rolled, the clock would be rolled back to prior to December 23rd, 2000, the so-called Christmas coup, there was cheering that you couldn't believe. I believe Democracy Now! Aired some of that sound on its first day back on the radio.
So the return of the so-called fired and banned to the airwaves of WBAI, and they're moving the clock back till before the Christmas coup. Some critics of some of these latest moves are saying that the board may have overreached, that it had no real authority to meddle in personnel matters at WBAI, that was the job of an executive director, for instance, and not the national board members. What's your answer to that?
Well, traditionally that has been the case, but the WBAI situation was special. As part of the legal settlement, the court mandated that a special committee be formed to deal with the WBAI situation. So that was an unusual case, and it is not, as some critics are claiming, an illegal move by the board. In fact, just the contrary.
Well, this big meeting happened, and the formulation of the interim Pacifica National Board happened because of this judge's ruling. Give us a thumbnail of that. What happened, and when was that?
This happened about a month ago. The four lawsuits were proceeding toward trial, which were to have happened this month. In the 11th hour, a settlement was reached following somewhat of a breakthrough that happened at the previous national board meeting in Washington, D.C. The board majority at that time, looking out at the angry, determined activists, realized that we were not going away. Bert Lee, one of their staunchest members from the previous board majority, asked the others, "Hey, what if we all resign? And then let's come up with some sort of a new interim board and talk about settling the lawsuit." So that's really how it all began.
Now, people are, a lot of dissidents and a lot of the activists that have been looking forward to this day for a long time are very happy about these developments, but are there still pitfalls on the road to establishing accountability and, you know, listener input and democracy at the stations?
In some sense, I actually think that the hardest part of the struggle may still be ahead of us. We have a lot of work to do, also mandated by the court settlement. In the next 12 months, now 11 as the clock keeps ticking, the bylaws of the Pacifica Foundation must be rewritten, and it is mandated that listener sponsors will receive formal enfranchisement. Now, for those of us who have been fighting for democracy and accountability, that has really been the basis of this movement from its inception. We know, having been educated by Pacifica Radio and looking around at the United States of America, that having a vote doesn't really mean that you have either real democracy or real accountability. So one of our challenges is to find a structure that will truly create a participatory organization and something that is really going to be responsive and inclusive. And so we're going to be breaking new ground there, and a lot of people are coming up with different ideas, and no doubt that's going to be an interesting but contentious process. Also, the structure that we create really must take into account a fact that that's going to remain a fact of life for us at Pacifica always. This is probably the most valuable media property not under corporate or government control in the United States. Its licenses are worth perhaps close to $500 million if sold on the open market, and having transmitters in five major U.S. cities that are not under the thumb, you know, of the corporate government nexus makes it a real threat. They are going to come at us again, and we've got to understand how this happened to us and come up with a structure that's going to, nothing can guarantee success, but something that gives us the best possible advantage in fighting the next takeover attempt that's sure to come. And I personally think that we really need a root cause analysis, some sort of a formal investigation by the organization to really look into the mechanisms of how this happened and how it was that something was allowed to go as far as this went without people making serious effort to stop it. If we don't face our own failings of vigilance and action in that, and rectify the internal problems that really did exist in, you know, inside the organization and in our relationship to our communities, if we don't face the fact that those things were there and seriously look at doing it differently and better, then it's really going to put us behind an eight ball. And next time, we may not be so fortunate as to prevail. This was not easy, and it was really a very close call.
Finally, Lynn, we've been speaking about the Pacifica Radio Network, but why shouldn't the same principles of listener democracy and ownership apply to all non-commercial radio? For that matter, why shouldn't those principles apply to commercial radio, too?
Well, that's a good question. Yes, why indeed shouldn't it? I mean, the fact is that although the airwaves are nominally public, they've been completely privatized and increasingly bear little to no resemblance of a service to the American people. They're purveyors of lies and propaganda for the powerful interests that dominate both this country and increasingly the world. They certainly don't allow their critics to speak. I think what has happened in the wake of the September 11th attacks has been probably one of the most disgraceful, fascistic displays of a use of media that I have seen in my life. I think it really calls the question that you ask. Yes, as far as I'm concerned, it should be the business of the American people to take all of the airways back, not just that tiny little slice that we call Pacifica.
We've been speaking with Lynn Gehry, radio activist and listener organizer. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.